Parrish, how do our dreams relate to accumulation of sanskaras or burning up of sanskaras? I mean, in my dream state, when I'm sleeping, sanskaras formed, are they burned up? What happens? Because it's sanskaras that are being expressed in my dreams.
But while being expressed, they unfold. They are being spent through the dreams. They come to the surface and they get spent. And then they're just spent out. Then there are many other sanskaras, you see, during your daytime, during your whole life, you have been involved in that. Not only this life, but past life also is there. So all these accumulations continue to take place. It is not that there is the end only by just having one dream and the sanskara is finished. No. Sanskars beget sanskars. Impressions beget impressions. So that's why the other day we were talking of is, why is it necessary that we should time and again hold on to the feet of the one who is impressionless? Because only through the impressions of the impressionless can we uproot the impressions of the ones that are impressioned always. You see? Yeah. We take him to be somebody. Who is that somebody who has no impressions? So if we continue to harp upon that, the image of somebody who has no impressions, he is impressionless. No amount of his acting or inacting or whatever it is, it doesn't create any impressions. So on himself, as we create, suppose if we sit quiet, even sitting quietly, sitting still creates impressions, isn't it? We are active, even that creates impressions. So either we are overactive, I am too talkative. So I said, all right, I am keeping silence. The impressions of being too talkative are there. Then that will be counteracted with the impressions of my remaining silent. But they are impressions. But then what happens that if I continue to remain silent for a long time, I'll overcome the impressions of my being too talkative, but then I will inherit the impressions of my being silent. But there are impressions, I'm bound by these impressions. So these bindings can be unlocked or uprooted by having the impressions of the impressionless. Only that is the instrument that can eradicate the impressions of the one who is impressioned.
So you don't, when I'm dreaming, having a dream at night...
You don't spend up all your impressions.
I'm spending up some, but I also may be creating
at
the same time.
Yes, yes.
In your dream you're creating impressions?
Yeah.
So then to meditate on Baba and think of Baba is like...
If you were not creating impressions, then how will you remember?
That's the impression, it's the remembrance. So if you don't remember your dream, then you didn't create an impression?
Not necessarily.
If you don't remember it, that means it is past.
Yeah, it is past, but not necessarily, because subconscious is there.
So then the thinking of Baba, meditating, is like a tool that's uprooting your impressions.
Because that's the tool. Thinking or meditating or whatever you call it, remembering him or talking about him, hearing stories about him, all are being, your mind is being impressed. Impressed of what? Or what impressions you are gathering? Of the one who is impressionless.
So that's displacing your impression.
That goes on chopping off the impressions. You see, that we have gathered, I have gathered, I am an impress. My impressions are not, I am not unimpressionless person, individual, I am impressioned person. So naturally to approve that, we need those impressions.
Does it matter if your mind and heart are wholeheartedly accepting these impressions? Or, I mean, what I'm saying is, right now I'm having kind of a drought period. But I'm listening to the stories and I'm enjoying the stories. And I go to the tomb and I bow down at the tomb and so on. But I'm not aware of a lightening or any effect at all. I'm not feeling more love or anything like that. Is it still...
It's a drought period.
Very drought. Is it still removing impressions or supplanting?
No, it is removing still.
Even if you don't feel it.
Repeating this what happens.
So even if you don't feel, still it's working, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're feeling drunk, yeah. Nothing,
still
it's working.
Yeah, yeah. Just listen to what the great one has said on this question.
Yeah.
Even if you are in drought now, or total famine, either.
Both,
yeah.
Starvation and thirst.
Starvation, famine, drought, whatever it is.
It's like a depression,
yeah,
isn't it?
But then, yeah.
The medicine works whether you
are
in the mood or not.
But even
It does work. It helps all the time. Do you mean to say that those who feel that and all that, take my case. I feel so happy to recount and retell the stories that crossed my mind while having spent time with him and all that. I recall these things and feel refreshed and all that.
Yes.
But do you mean to say that my mind is not being impressioned with extraneous impressions at the time? It is. But then again it is counteracted and all that. So it goes on. Sometimes I don't feel the urge of saying anything and all, anything of the sort. You see, there's total drought and famine and all that. But still then what happens, I hear somebody telling something, I'm not in that frame of mind, and yet I hear, again I feel, then there's a surge again coming. Yeah.
Mm.
The drought, so you read out, what happened here? Just something has fallen out of it.
But there is, you know, some people, like you're doing business in the world, you really get impressions.
Huh?
In the world, business and all that?
Yeah, you get impression. Yeah. But then, it is but natural, Mom. What you have to do is to, time and again, hold on to the feet of the one who is impressionless.
So that erases
the time and again, you have to go there. Does he not have work? What are you doing, brother?
This is fine.
Who are you?
I'm an advocate.
He's an advocate.
See?
Oh, so naturally he has to do so many things, but time and again he takes an opportunity to come and be at the feet of the one who is impressionless. He feels peace, he feels quiet.
That erases
that
it?
That helps to erase. It can't erase. Of course it can if his grace is there.
But
in a moment
to...
it's gone. Yeah. If his grace is there. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
An apologia is needed for a work. Fariduddin, in his characteristic style, offers one for his tatkara. He says that the reason for compiling this grand volume that contains the biographical sketches of the saints of Persia is to place before the readers who are keen seekers after truth an account of the tense yearning that burned in the hearts of the great Sufis and who, by stating their experiences, taught the sublimest and the simplest way to realization, and also to tell how to escape the vagaries that beset the seeker treading the path.
Including famines and droughts.
Mm-hmm. Other reasons he cryptically states thus. One, after the death of Yahya Ammar, a saint saw him in a dream and asked him how he fared before the Lord. He replied, "The Lord forgave me my transgressions for the simple reason that I used to deliver sermons to the congregations on the lives of the Sufis."
Just that.
One day a saint of repute, a great lover of God, was pleased with me and blessed me. His blessings saved me undergoing punishment. Sheikh Bu Ali Dikka was asked, "Will it profit us merely to hear the discourses of saints without acting upon them?" He replied, "Yes, by merely hearing, the desire to meet God automatically develops in a devotee, and consequently, egoism and pride leave him, and he becomes cloaked in humility." Hazrat Junayat said,
"All these are perfect masters, mind you, not just mere names."
Hazrat Junayat said, "These accounts placate broken hearts." The Prophet Muhammad says, "The Lord said, O Muhammad, I recite to you the sketches of the ancient prophets, so that thy weak heart be strengthened, and ye feel spiritual hunger and solace." The Prophet says, "On the repetition of the accounts of the lives of the saints, the grace of the Lord descends on the audience."
That's pretty good.
Sheikh Bu Ali Sina says, "I cherish two desires, to hear nothing besides the life sketches of the saints, and to meet none but the beloved of the Lord, the saints. Fariduddin Akhtar says, by hearing these accounts of the saints, a desire to seek God and to renounce the world is born, as also a friendship grows for the Lord, and the desire to accumulate those goods that alone shall accompany one to the other world develops. And above all, what the Trappists call memento mori, remembrance of death, comes to the forefront in one's life. He says, through writing this book, I seek the blessings of those great saints who are ever living, whose accounts I have recorded here. Just as the companions of the Prophet interceded for the dog that used to lie at their door when they sat in meditation in solitude, so wish I that these saints intercede for me on the day of judgment, though I feel myself inferior to a dog. In this desire of mine, I am strengthened by the account of Jamal Musli, who passed his life in great austerities and made munificent gifts to the poor and sought by all the privilege that his tomb be located at the foot of the Prophet's sepulchre, bearing this inscription, "Your dog is lying at your threshold."
So,
did he see?
So then it means to say that even a man, let's say a priest, or will give a wonderful sermon and he'll uplift the people.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't really believe what he's saying, it's blessing all the people and blessing him too.
Yeah.
So many, you know, even they don't mean it, but you're sitting there and you're really feeling it, then you're being blessed, if he's not. Yeah, I mean,
because so many others are listening, you see, and so many hearts have been stirred.
He is
speaking out, you see, just superficially.
Yeah, but still he's
doing his only daily chore, you see. But then he gets the blessings of so many hearts that have been stirred, who get the urge to go towards the Lord, to fly to Him, to be with Him and all that. So all this also interacts. That is to his credit. That's how it is.
And then the other way is that you're sitting there, like she says, and but you don't feel it. Still something's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
The seed is being planted. Yeah. Later on, you'll bear fruit.
Nothing is in vain.
So do it. If you don't feel like, go and do it, regardless.
Yeah.
So that's not true what you say. Well, don't do it if you don't feel it. That's not true. Do it
even
if you don't feel it.
Have you heard of a person who has no good appetite and he doesn't feel like eating? Suppose I'm full or something is wrong with my stomach and all that. There are cases in the world like that. I have no liking, you see, for any food or anything. Don't talk to me about food or anything. And there are people who are eating over here, perforce it's so that he is caught up there in the presence. He's food is being served, and he's there, and he has no appetite and all that. And we have come across cases that his appetite is aroused with the aroma or with the sight of it. And he begins to have a morsel, two morsels, and that's enough for him. But those two morsels then add up to two more, and it goes on. And then all of a sudden there is a surge of appetite in his physique, where in the beginning he didn't have any appetite. You usually find such things happening with invalids, you see, who have just returned, you see, from long cases of hospitalization and all that sort of thing. So gradually the surge comes in, but only at the time when you are, therefore forced feeding is necessary, is there. So, whether you like it or not, so it is necessary. So that you can, your appetite, once again you get the appetite.